You see these goods? Never seen daylight, moonlight, Israelite, fanny by the gaslight. Handmade in Italy, hand stolen in Stepney. It's as long as my arm. I wish it was as long as something else. Don't think because these boxes are sealed up they're empty. The only man who sells empty boxes is the Undertaker.
It's Britney, bitch.
And I rock everywhere like such a...
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Out, Charlie! Out!
Our next door neighbors are foreign countries.
I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Remember Shuffle. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jordano.
Hello.
Excellent. And today we are joined by Brian Quinby of the Guys podcast to discuss two films written by a most excellent guy. We are here to discuss Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels from 1998 and Snatch from the year 2000. Thank you so much for coming on the pod, Brian.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, this is the most creative way that somebody's got me to do their podcast by saying guys. Like, nobody's ever picked a guy named Guy. It's always like somebody's like, you want to come over and talk about leftist guys doing leftist stuff or like racists or something? You know? I got out of that world.
What I love about your podcast is when it started out, they were immediately such recognizable guys to me, like classic rock guys. History guys. And now I would have never thought of reptile guys as a type of guy, but as soon as I hear it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's absolutely a type of guy.
Oh yeah, reptile guys are common. That was actually a hard episode to prep. Luckily, Professor Herp was there to get us through some of the episodes. There's some weirder ones coming up. I don't know if they're weirder, like rockabilly is something that people know, but foodies as opposed to Yelp guys, which we've already done. Foodies is an insane episode of I found a really weird guy.
Hell yeah.
It's like when you're panning for gold sometimes and you're reading reviews of restaurants and you're reading reviews of stuff and you just find, I just found one yesterday on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm not even working right now. I'm off for 2 weeks, but I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes and I was like thinking about watching this movie From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh,
this documentary about From Dusk Till Dawn. And I found a guy that was like, this documentary is great and it shows how all unions are evil.
Oh no.
And so I was like, wow, that's a really weird fucking review. I mean, there were a lot of them in there that were like really weird reviews, but then like I clicked his thing and was reading through, and man, I feel like I know the guy. Like, I live with him now. I read, like, fucking 50 reviews. And then it made me immediately go to my list of guys and write Rotten Tomatoes guys.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This guy's, like, reviewing The Goonies, and he's like, perfect, a five-star movie, just ruined by people who quote it. And it's like, why did it get ruined? Like, what happened? This guy is great. He's great. I have to try and find him. I've found like a lot of guys that I can't use.
Mm-hmm.
We did Nudist with Ike Barinholtz, and that just came out today. And when I was doing that, I was going to Quora and checking like people talking about dick size and stuff like that, just looking for funny things
mm-hmm.
in Quora about Nudist.
Of course.
And I found a guy that's writing erotic gay porno on Quora. It's so crazy.
Amazing.
It was, I was completely shocked. The first one I read, I was like, this reads like porno. And so I clicked his link and I read another one. I was like, this also reads like porno. And then I read every single one of them.
Amazing.
It's wild. The way people use these websites, sorry, you already immediately derail your show.
I mean, it's like podcasting. You have to like market outside the box, and it's like you got to just get eyeballs on it. And if it's on Quora to the answer of like, you know, what do I do if my toes are too close together, and you can work in your porno spec, then you know what? Go for it.
It's just so weird, guys, that like, because I don't think it's normal to spend all your life on Twitter or X or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying that is normal, but guys that pick like Rotten Tomatoes as their place. I think that is really fucking weird because it's not exactly a social networking site.
No.
You know what I mean? That's what got me doing the show. What got me doing Guys was that like I'd be prepping episodes of Street Fight and I would find myself in the comment section, clicking on a guy that commented something racist on a news story and then trying to track his life. You know what I mean? Because they just get so fascinated by like weird guys.
Yeah, getting snapshots of weird guys on the internet. It's I wonder if when you talk about people using Rotten Tomatoes as a social media website, which is not what it's made for, I wonder if one day down the line there will be a Venmo guy, a guy who treats Venmo as his primary social media platform.
Dude, I'll bet you I could find it. I can almost guarantee you if I went in and I started looking at that kind of stuff, you know, if I went in and started looking for it, it would be definitely like I'd find a guy for sure. I mean, what you're really likely to find on Venmo is guys sending women $1 so they can say something nasty. You know,
yeah.
Brutal.
Oh, here it is. I found the guy because I wanted to read it for you guys. I should have saved it because he did review the two movies.
Oh, excellent. We're talking.
His favorite movie is The Wedding Singer. That's like his favorite movie. And he says like, and like a lot of times he will compare other movies to The Wedding Singer and be like, this movie is no Wedding Singer.
Not even the best Adam Sandler movie.
No. And he gets mad at the new ones now because they're not as good as The Wedding Singer. I'll find him. Cool. I loved his reviews of both of these movies, too. He loves them, by the way.
Yeah. Of course.
He's like a certified Kevin Smith guy and a Guy Ritchie guy, he seems to be.
Awesome. Well, that's actually kind of a perfect segue, because there are two guys that this episode is about. One is, of course, the director Guy Ritchie, but the other is, I guess you'd call him something like a dorm room cinephile. And Giordano has some research in the field. I'll let him take this.
Yeah, I used to be like an RA in college, and when you're doing your rounds, you end up seeing like a lot of dorm rooms. And I couldn't help but notice that there's like a 15 to 20% of the population that would have the same three posters on their walls. And this is the second entry in what I'm calling our dorm room poster cinephile series. And so the three posters are Fight Club, The Boondock Saints, and Snatch. So two of these posters would often feature a shirtless Brad Pitt. And what I love about these people are that they love movies and love to think of themselves as a cinephile. And these are the three movies that they think are the world's best.
Yeah, they're not putting up Akira Kurosawa posters or Casablanca posters. This is a particular kind of beautiful moron cinephile, which, for the record, I say that with love. Giordano and I were this back in the day. The second episode of this pod that we ever recorded was on The Boondock Saints, not the fucking Sopranos or anything.
So I was a cable guy for 7 years, and like I was working in a suburb, so I wasn't working by the college or anything. So I really didn't run into a lot of college students in my 20s because I was a fucking loser. But I would work out there and I would pay attention to what DVDs everybody had. Mm. And one of the DVDs that showed up, and it's got to be the opposite. I mean, obviously they have Fight Club. Obviously they had Snatch. But every single house I went to had Elektra on DVD. And I could never figure out like if it was on sale. You know what I mean? Like is it constantly on sale? Because everybody fucking had it. And you can't find a person that watched Elektra anywhere. Could never, if you went and asked 10 people, 10 of them wouldn't have watched Elektra. And they might even own the CD or the DVD, you know? Like,
maybe we got to do an Elektra.
That was another thing about I want to say the other thing I found about the guy that I found last night is another one of his favorite movies, 5 stars, Daredevil.
Oof.
And he said that, like, people only don't like it because they're hipsters. Well, actually, he said people loved it when it came out. Now they act like hipsters.
Mm.
And it's like, that is insane.
Yeah, no,
you know,
we did not. One of the only superhero movies to fail in that early 2000s window, right before they all blew up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here's one for you. I found him. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. 5 stars. The most loyal adaptation of the Superman comic books on film yet. No angst. and plenty of superhero versus supervillain action. No angst in this. There's just zero angst in this movie. Bad Boys 2, money well spent, action done right. No one else films action like Michael Bay.
Well, that's true.
Hey, look, Michael Bay made one of my favorite fucking movies, and I know it's bad. I think
The Rock?
Him. No, you will never guess it 100 times. Pain and Gain. Have you ever seen Pain and Gain?
Can't say I've had the pleasure.
The Rock in it, Mark Wahlberg. It's insane. Truly one of the craziest movies I've seen. Daredevil. Here it goes. 5 stars. Talk about a movie everyone loved when it first came out and then turned on. Everyone who hated this film is a traitor to America, nay, the world.
So true. So fucking true.
Blade, 4 stars. 5 stars for the first 10 minutes. It's all downhill from there. And we all know what Blade says about fools who try to skate uphill, right? So this guy's got a definite like thing he likes, because 5 stars for Red Eye, like 5 stars for Crank, which is actually true. Here's Lockstock. Mm-hmm. 5 stars. Mm-hmm. A classic. What snob doesn't like it?
Correct. Tell me the lie.
Here's Snatch. Great. Simply great. If only there was a third film like it in the barrels. So there you go. I got you. So, and here's Boondock Saints. The majority of the world can't be wrong, and they're not. Very cool film. 4 stars.
A man of great taste. Yeah, I love that segment of your show where you find quotes in the strangest places. I'm always impressed where, you know, it'll be like the Funko Pop review section for the Kevin Smith Funko Pop or something. But I went ahead and grabbed some quotes from the type of guy we're talking about here. And so here, this were some of the comments I found online about Snatch. One of the best movies ever, along with Fight Club. Tell everyone you know about it. People need to see this movie.
They need to see it like it's got a big message.
Yeah. Yeah, like, how is the world improved if more people have seen Snatch?
It's not even like it's good. It's like really good for like a dumb guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it feels like you're watching something smart.
Yeah.
Because they do all the smash cuts and the weird, because they do all that weird like camera stuff.
Sure.
That you're like, oh, I must be, because I thought I was like, I love these movies. Mm-hmm. When they came out, and I would walk around the cable job that I was at and the call center and roofing, and I would act like I was like better than the people I worked with, as in like I didn't want to be considered a like a redneck kind of guy. So I tried to have like refined taste.
Yeah, you're watching international foreign films.
Exactly. And I felt that way watching Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. When you can't, you're sitting there, you're like some dipshit from Ohio and you can't understand like 3/4 of the words, and you're like, this is good. Now this is a movie.
Yeah, this is good writing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that. I think the difference between the people I worked with and me was that I did, and it was like this growing up too. I always read like the insides of CD. Like I read the booklets that came with CDs. Mm-hmm. And I always read the back of the DVD, and I always looked at all the special features, and I always know who the writer was and who the director was. And that's so I would be able to go to work and I'd be like, yeah, you know, I was watching Snatch directed by Guy Ritchie. You ever heard of him? He did Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. It's kind of a foreign movie. You might not get it, but
yes.
And I do that with Tarantino too. Mm-hmm. I would act like that's the only guy at work that saw Pulp Fiction.
Yes. And we're gonna get to that comparison for sure. And I think I had the exact same feeling you describe. And I think part of it is, you hit the nail on the head, it's the editing, like the smashing from one group of people to the other. And it's the fact that there are a lot of characters, a lot of moving parts, a lot of plot lines, which gives it this feel of complexity. And so when you're watching it, you're like, man, I'm fucking smart. I'm following this. This is like,
yeah, I understand it. But every guy is like such a big character, and you're just really, all you're like is like, where's Brad Pitt? When's the Brad Pitt parts coming on? Yeah. That's how I always was. Mm-hmm. I was always like trying to quote Brad Pitt in Snatch.
Bold.
You can't do it. And if you're dumb, especially. But I think that character from Snatch had like a profound impact for me because of the, like, I really like the world of like travelers and, but they call them pikeys in this movie. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, the guys that travel around and go from city to city saying, hey, your driveway looks like it needs sealed, and then they paint it black, take the money and just get the fuck out of
town. Yeah.
And I like carnies and stuff like that. So I have a really like strong feelings about Brad Pitt in this show. Like, it was the first time I ever saw like a kind of low-level con man, which is kind of my favorite people in the world.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's the charm of this movie for sure, which we'll get into in a second. I just wanted to read the other quote that I found, because this guy is even better. Funny, I almost got fired because of this movie. Specifically the scene where Bricktop talks about the word nemesis. I was talking to my boss and quoted the scene, and another person in the room got super offended that I used the C word in front of her, like reported it to HR. Though I still fucking love this movie.
I wouldn't have said that, and that's just me. I probably would have left that part out.
Anyway, before we get into the Lockstock plot summary, Brian, I just want to say that we wanted to invite you on because, you know, you were talking about these sort of like low-level criminals. And we know that this is probably why you love something like Sons of Anarchy. And we saw this movie as sort of having like a spiritual connection to those movies because, you know, both Lockstock and Snatch take place in a world where you have these two-bit gangsters who are bumbling and not making very much money, it seems like.
His movies are good in that way, like that, like the low level. I mean, when I was in college, I focused on low level crime, and like I would go to these like sociology and criminology classes, and they'd be like, why do you care about people that are like ripping off $100? And I was like, because I don't think they should be in jail. It's just $100.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one issue I had with Guy Ritchie, like as his career went on, is he started making movies about like $20 million like real estate scams in Rock'n'Rolla, or like the world's largest marijuana distributor in The Gentleman. And I'm like, you're not good at this. You're good at showing me Billy the Bat Fist and these guys who are able to steal, you know, muskets or something.
There is a charm of The Gentleman that it seems like what a fucking dumb guy would think like a classy gentleman is, which that's like a little bit of charm, but I didn't like that movie.
I hate it. I think it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's brutal and people love it. I have no idea why.
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, that's true. It does have the Sons of Anarchy connection in him.
So yeah, if you haven't watched this 25-year-old movie recently, we're going to start with a quick summary of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, which I do think is the superior of the two movies. And this is a movie that was nearly independent, and it shows. It looks like a lower budget movie, and it really gets across the feel and the vibe of 90s grimy East London. And it tells the story of these four just low-level two-bit criminals that are buds. You got a card shark, a fence, a hustler, and a chef. And the A plot of the movie is that they incur a $500,000 debt to a real criminal who knows his shit. And here's something that's very funny and dated. They owe money to a porn magnate named Achit Ari, and they need to scrounge up the money in 1 week or he'll have them killed. And the general plot is that they are neighbors with a stick-up gang, a group that robs drug dealers, that's kind of like Omar, but without the charisma or backstory, and with names like Dog and Plank. And our four heroes are going to rob the next-door neighbors after those next-door neighbors rob a circle of, I guess you would call them reefer addicts, in true late 90s, early 2000s fashion.
These friggin' marijuana heads. Weed was so, like, it's so weird to think of the world where weed was like really considered something. That's why The Gentleman is so weird, because in America, it's just like, well, we just go to the store to buy weed.
Yeah.
I love the 90s weed guy that appears in this movie, the like grunge hippie. I feel like you also have that figure. Have you ever seen True Romance also with Brad? Yeah. It has an identical plot to this movie, but Brad Pitt in that movie is a great 90s weed guy as well.
He's actually funny in that, like, insanely funny in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the B plot, such as it is of this movie, is that that same crime kingpin, Achit Ari, is going to pay some bumbling small-time crooks to steal some old muskets from some British aristocrat. This is the two smoking barrels of the title. Achit Ari is going to use his two enforcers, Big Chris and one of the greatest characters to ever grace the silver screen, Barry the Baptist, to make sure that he gets the guns from that B plot and the money from our heroes in the A plot. And all of these plot lines intertwine in this big Seinfeldian plot bow, and every single party except for our four heroes comes into a room at the same time and die in a Mexican standoff. And that is the tight 100 minutes of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And on the way, there's a whole bunch of jokes because it's like an action crime comedy, and it rocks for real, unironically.
Yeah, I love that movie. I love Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. This is a very fun fucking movie to watch.
Which is your favorite of the two, Lock, Stock, or Snatch?
I have more of a connection with Snatch because I think I saw it first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the years these movies came out were very weird years for me. But I think I was a totally different person between them. I just graduated high school when Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels came out. And I would have never found it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was living in like a fucking two-bedroom apartment with like six people. And we were just fucking doing drugs all the time.
Hell yeah.
So I don't think I would have ever found it. But then Snatch came out in 2000. I was in a little bit of a different situation. I think I was even dating my wife at the time. And like we ended up renting it and buying it on DVD and owning it. So like Snatch, I have more of a connection to.
Yeah. I think whichever one you like always comes down to which one you saw first. Because I cannot stress enough, they're the same movie. It's yeah. The same thing, just with different actors and a higher budget in Snatch. So whichever one you saw first, it's the one that blows your mind first. And you're like, this rocks. Now this is cinema.
I think it also Snatch to a person that doesn't watch a ton of, like, I guess, foreign movies is what these would be. Mm-hmm. Snatch looks closer to what you would be familiar with watching, like, crime movies. And also, like, it really doesn't feel like there was very few crime comedy movies in that period of time. It was kind of a new genre. I'm sure there are ones that people could name from the 90s, but these are straight up, this guy's trying to be funny and violent and, you know, make almost an action movie. So
yeah,
they're novel. It's like Quentin Tarantino only makes like one movie every 5 years. So we need a guy that can crank out these movies.
Yes.
Faster than him.
And like I said, we don't need to go beat by beat in the plot summary for Snatch. But in the same way, we have a bumbling hero played by Jason Statham, who is an illegal bare knuckle boxer promoter who incurs a debt to an actual crime lord. And then there's also a plot MacGuffin around a diamond heist that's followed by several stick-ups, and it passes hands over and over again. But I think the funniest part about these two movies is that so much of what was a crime back then is now legal. MMA is legal, weed is legal, internet pornography is everywhere, and you can, you know, run your own business on OnlyFans. There's no such thing as a porn magnate now. You can sell your own stuff. Most of the low-level crime is just legal now, which is part of what makes
video poker.
Oh, video poker too. Yeah, gambling. They advertise gambling on the Super Bowl now.
All of these little two-bit crimes have, you know, it's over for the little guy, I guess, because now, like, tech companies do all of the things that, you know, Turkish used to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, it is weird that, like, no crimes. I can't think of any of the things that they're, this, like, might even be a good thing to put out there. Like, look, if you legalize stuff, all this stuff goes away.
To stress how much it's the same movie, here's a micro lens specifics. Both movies involve our main characters being in a crime lord's debt, with characters literally saying things like, "That's exactly where you don't want to be, in Bricktop's debt," which is the closest I can do to a Cockney accent. I know it's closer to the peon in Warcraft 3, but...
Work. Yes, my lord.
They literally redo the joke about having an impractically large gun. In Lock, Stock, the stick-up gang brings a giant World War II era Bren gun. "That's me Bren gun," he says several times. In the bookie robbery scene in Snatch, someone brings a giant automatic shotgun, and another character says, "It's a fucking anti-aircraft rifle." Both movies feature just way too many nicknames. Bricktop, Frankie Fourfingers, Boris the Bullet Dodger, Doug the Head, Soap, Nick the Greek.
Yeah, Boris the Bullet Dodger has two nicknames for some reason.
Yeah. He's both Boris the Bullet Dodger and Boris the Blade.
He couldn't decide. He's like, "We'll just use both."
Yeah, even at like a micro level, these are the same movie.
I love that he never, like, they'll explain what the nicknames mean if it comes up, but most of the time we don't get an explanation into, like, why someone is called Bricktop. And Frankie Four Fingers is a great, because we don't actually get to spend that much time with Frankie, unfortunately, but naming him that characterizes his gambling addiction a little bit, which is nice. We get like a 4-second clip of him in Vegas, or presumably getting incurring some kind of gambling debt and losing a finger.
And it's almost like Polaroids of him gambling with Viva Las Vegas playing in the background. All of the information about the character has been conveyed without words. Show, don't tell. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to stop for a second, because one of the most memorable parts of this movie is definitely Brad Pitt's performance as Mickey, the pikey boxer, who is an American playing this Irish traveler. And one of the reasons why I was in so many dorm rooms, I think, is because it became like body goals for a lot of people. And it's weird because in my head, like, I saw this movie as a teenager and I was like, oh yeah, he's ripped in this movie. Like, he's huge. And then I watched it to prepare for this because I think bodies have changed so much since the 2000s. And this is like a 2000s pod, so we like to talk about how things have changed. But you look at this movie, you're like, this is the smallest man I've ever seen. I think people have just gotten so much bigger. Even like in every superhero movie, I think it's just like expected that you do steroids. And mm-hmm. So you look at Brad Pitt in this movie and he's like an ectomorph. He's got very small shoulders. He's very thin.
He is shredded though, dude. There's not an ounce of fat on him.
And I never said he wasn't shredded. Okay. I'm just saying that he's not particularly bulky and muscular, which maybe was like a heroin chic holdover from the 90s or something. But it was a strange thing, I think, to notice that I sort of misremembered how fit he was. And I have a little clip here just of him speaking generally, because it is one of the more memorable points of the movie. So I'll play that here.
Fuck me. Just look at the size of him. How big are you? Hey, kids. How big is he?
He's a big man, that's for sure.
Hey, man. Come on, look at the size of this fella. Bet your back's a little concentrated. You look like a boxer.
But yeah, one of the strangest lathe of heaven moments of this movie, too, is that we now, like, the heavyweight boxing champion of the world is Tyson Fury, you know, a Irish traveler boxer.
Yep, British guy. Got ourselves, people used to think British guys aren't tough. Now, I mean, that might be another part of this sort of movie, right? It's like, back then, British guys just, you didn't go around saying British guys are tough. They were like dandies that eat like tea and crumpets and stuff. So that was also very weird to see, like basically to see a new kind of British guy.
holy shit, they can be tough too.
Yeah, oh my god, there is another kind of British guy. Unfucking believable. Prince Charles and then these guys.
Yeah. Played by an American, but yeah.
Yeah.
Hilariously, Brad Pitt asked to be in this movie, but he couldn't do a London accent, apparently. So Guy Ritchie had him do the traveler accent, which to me seems like it would be way tougher to do, but what do I
wonder if it's even good. Like, it's hard to know because I don't know any travelers, yeah. You know?
Also true.
Yeah, I think it's a good segue for our next section here, which is just talking about like the setting of these movies, because I think that really is the magic of both films. The plot is sort of fun, but I think that the reason why people like to rewatch this and think of it fondly is that it brings you into this very quaint British world. It's like grimy East London. All of these criminals sort of know each other. They all have nicknames that they refer to each other as. It's like if it's a small town, like the Shire for criminals.
Yes.
They clock in every day at the Ministry of Crime, and they have little reputations and specializations, and they do their little low-stakes crimes. And like the Sons of Anarchy, you kind of get the sense that they're making like maybe $20,000 a year hustling this hard, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was what I loved about Sons of Anarchy, is what they make. They're like making poverty wages to be in danger of getting shot every day of their life.
And like, right before everything goes to hell in Lockstock, when our characters have successfully pulled off more than a $500,000 heist, they just go and get drunk at one of their dad's bars is how they celebrate their millionaire status. It rocks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's cool. I mean, that's why Mean Streets is such a great movie, right? Is that it is about the lowest level scumbags that you could possibly ever have. So I like the low level guys more than, you know, I don't fucking care. Like, when you get to a high level in crime, at least in movie crime, I can't say in real life, I have not gotten to a high level of crime.
Mm-hmm.
in real life. But it seems like when you get to the high level in crime in movies, you basically just go to meetings all the time with people and you know, sit at a table while people bring you money. It seems like it's so boring to me. It's like, that's why Donnie Brasco is one of those movies that we just can't stop talking about, because it's like, it's a fucking, this is what a lifetime gangster looks like. It's way more interesting to me to see people who have decided to make their trade being a gangster, that maybe, because most of us, if we did that, we wouldn't get there.
Yeah, we wouldn't get to the point of having the gangster version of an email job, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that, like, in that world, if we're just taking movies seriously, you either have to be really willing to kill people or be somebody's son, which is kind of basically what life is like outside of crime.
Sure, yeah. And one of the things that makes these movies so great is that tension, actually. In both movies, our heroes are the small time, and they're not especially competent. The first time we see Jason Statham hustling on the street, we see him just fuck up royally. Like, throw a suitcase full of stolen goods down a staircase and it's open and everything spills everywhere. You know, we keep using the word bumbling. But where the tension comes from in these movies is that our bumbling, incompetent, two-bit criminals get thrust into the high-stakes world of, like, I'm a gangster who feeds people to pigs, or, like, I've beaten a man to death with a big black dildo. They get put into a high-stakes environment, and it's fish out of water slash for comedy effect. It is also where the plot tension comes from. It's part of what makes these so good.
Yeah.
I think we also, like, when we watch the low-level scumbags in these movies, God damn, there is a movie I watched, or a TV show maybe. It's like a crime show on Amazon with Stephen Merchant in it. And one of the guys is a drug dealer that sits in his apartment and watches TV all day, and people just bring him money and pizza. Like, they bring him a pizza box with money in it, with some pizza in it. He just sits there. I was like, now, fuck, that's better than my job. And, like, my job is easy as, I can't imagine having an easier job than I have, but he definitely has an easier job than I have.
Yeah. And when Guy Ritchie gets more successful and starts making other movies, like, when you watch something like The Gentlemen, everybody has the fighting capability of someone from Dragon Ball Z or can plan out the future like the Kwitsak Haderach. He really lost his way and really needs to go back and make a period piece with guys who don't know what they're doing and are trying to eke out a living. And
have you watched Wrath of Man?
I have not, no.
I haven't either. The cover is terrible. Like, when you see the cover of Wrath of Man, you're like, this looks like the, it just looks bad. It looks like the people that make movie posters were on strike. It is so bad. I can't bring myself to watch it because it's just, it's so pathetic looking when you're scrolling through. So I never even caught that. And the last one I saw was The Gentleman. And I was like, kind of like, I don't think I need to see this anymore. And now I Googled Wrath of Man. Oh, no, it's Operation Fortune. I'm sorry. That's the wrong movie. Wrath of Man has Post Malone in it.
Oh, no.
Look up the cover for Operation Fortune.
Oh, yes. This looks like it was photoshopped by a high schooler. Yes.
It's incredibly bad, right? Yeah. It is something you look at with a cast that the cast is insane, right? It's Jason Statham, Aubrey Plaza, Hugh Grant, Josh Hartnett, Cary Elwes. So that's a good cast. But when I look at the fucking picture, I'm just like, I'm not going to watch this fucking movie. It looks so cheap.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. And his most recent movie I heard about is like a weird patriotic American movie. Have you seen it?
No. He's done two of those movies, right? So he did the war movie that he just released recently. And the other weird one was one when he was dating Madonna. He made like a movie called Blown Away or Breath.
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah. I haven't seen
it. I never watched that. It's like a sex movie. It's with Madonna in it. It was a very odd, I got it right here. Oh, wow. He's been involved in a lot of weird shit. Swept Away with Madonna, 2002. It says, imagine being shipwrecked on a beautiful island with someone you really can't stand. A young soldier is cast adrift on an island with his employer, a rich, self-centered woman who is used to having her own way. Cut off from society, he reverses their roles, stripping her of pride and vanity and controlling her completely.
Wait, what?
Until, that is, she falls in love with him. It is a really not Guy Ritchie movie.
No.
It's a comedy, it says.
Yeah, it sounds like a psychological thriller involving manipulation. And like,
yeah, it sounds like a sex movie about showing a rich lady who's boss. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a remake of an Italian movie, but it's just such a weird, like, Guy Ritchie is always, it seems like he's always trying to just get out of the gangster thing. He wants out.
And he can't. He fundamentally does not realize his own limits.
He has one move, yeah.
Yeah.
He is almost like the characters in his movie in that, like, he's in this world where, like, all right, I'll make the covenant. Nobody's going to fucking see it. So now I have to make Operation Fortune. And I know people will go see it because it's crime guys in suits. And it just seems like, yeah, he can't. The ministry, his new thing is the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is a 2024 movie about the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is an upcoming American action spy film. So he's trying again to get out of, this has got a hell of a cast though, for real. but it's got Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchin, who that is Reacher, who is the greatest. But yeah, it seems like he's trying to do a war movie now. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Guy Ritchie thinks he's Quentin Tarantino and has the same talent as Quentin Tarantino.
Absolutely.
He's like, I'll have the same career growth as Tarantino, and I can do the war movie and I can do the dramas. That's true.
He directed Aladdin?
Oh yeah, I watched a bit of that. It was really bad.
Wow, he's directed so much stuff. Like, he's like a real workman, Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yep.
He must be a cool guy because he always gets like the best cast in these movies, and he hasn't made a good movie in like 20 years. So he must.
I do a podcast called the POD Cast about nu metal, and we've always talked about how Fred Durst is very clearly a very great guy that will love to be around. And that's what got him famous. He's not this big talent.
No.
But like, people like having him around and they think he's a great guy. And like, that's what made him famous. He literally met Korn. He told him he was a tattoo artist. And he said, he told their guitarist, I'm a tattoo artist. I'll give you a tattoo. I'll tattoo Korn on your back. And then he fucked the tattoo up. But he was such a cool guy hanging out with him and stuff that they got him a record deal for his band.
Wow.
That's
and like Guy Ritchie. Yeah, Guy Ritchie could definitely be like Fred Durst in that, like, he's not making anything good, but people like hanging out with him.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, I heard this great story about how he made these first two movies where he said he went down to the pub and he listened to stories and then he weaved them all together from like actual two-bit criminals that he heard down at the pub. And it's like, you know what? If you want to make a war movie, we got to send you to Afghanistan. If you want to make Aladdin, you got to get on that magic carpet ride, man. We need to put this man in the field if he wants to be able to make all these different kinds of movies.
For sure. And it's interesting that he's, I mean, like, I'll say this, in my career, which is not an important job by any means, but it is like extremely important that you're good to people and you're nice and you're accommodating. Mm. And the reason for that is because if you're not, then they're like, fuck this person. I'm not going to do anything with them again. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why I have like, I mean, for me, I have like a decent reputation because I'm pretty open to doing things and I don't talk shit about people I work with and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I've seen people who were around in the early times of that like podcast boom that are just gone. They're just off the map because they were hard to work with and they, you know, they weren't fun to hang around, you know? So I think that definitely to me speaks to Guy Ritchie and that like maybe it is possible that he's just sort of, he's great to be around. Oh, he, you know what else he made that was really good? He did make one movie outside of the gangster world that was really good.
What's that?
Or two. Sherlock Holmes. Those movies rule,
man. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah,
they are great. They're so fun. I wish they were still making them.
I love how the plot line of the second one is, what if Sherlock Holmes could prevent World War One from happening? And it's like he like prevents it from happening 4 years earlier, and we're like, tremendous victory, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, he's so good. And like, he's just a guy that can kick people's asses. Like, I didn't know Sherlock Holmes was like a tough guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love that Guy Ritchie loves working in fucking bare knuckle British boxing, right? Into anything that he does.
So I'm just going to move us along to the next section. But first, I just want to mention that because it's like a British movie and we have these two big criminals, it's just very funny that there's a real lack of guns in this criminal underworld. I counted four characters in Snatch with a sword and multiple with fake guns.
That's what's good about doing Europe. I really do. I agree with, like, there's something about watching crime movies from over there where they're like stabbing each other, where over here you just kill each other.
Yes. Yeah, Nick the Greek is like, oh, I couldn't get a gun on such short notice, so I got you the musket. And it's like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Me and my wife were watching this documentary about this fucking British tabloid guy. And I guess he had called in some sort of a fake threat. And they're like, so we called the gun unit of the police. And I'm like, wouldn't it be great if there was just one gun unit of the police and not just guys, like the most scared guys in the world, rocking around town with a gun on their
Yes. There's one gun unit. They get a ton of training. I'm sure they get the chillest, calmest ones on the force there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's locked up in the trunk. And like everybody else, yeah, it's a fucking Bobby. It's again what makes, I think, especially for like an American audience, it's what makes this so quaint.
And we laugh about Bobbies too. We love that shit. Mm-hmm. We love when you're an American and you're born, like by the time you're seven, somebody's told you they got Bobbies over there and they don't even have guns.
Mm-hmm.
We're all goofing.
I mean, we're from Canada originally. You wouldn't believe how many stupid Mountie jokes I've heard over the course of my life.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing we know about Canada. Yeah. It's cold and there's Mounties up there. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I always goofed on Canada for years because my dad he just loves Canada.
Oh, yeah.
He lived there till he was nine. He was born in Buffalo, so he was here. Mm-hmm. But then he moved to Canada until he was like 9 or 10, and he considers himself Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, you know, and he would always try to get me to like listen to Canadian comedy. Mm. And I was like, I don't like that shit. It's Canadian. And now all of my co-hosts are from Canada.
Hell yeah.
Chris and John are both from Canada.
Love it. Punching above our weight.
Yeah, it's great. Chris is great. He's like one of the funniest dudes in the world. Like Canadian people are actually funny. I was wrong about all that.
Nice. Yes.
So moving on to our characters section, we just wanted to broadly go over some of the most notable in these movies, because there's basically two types of characters in this movie. There's the bumbling, sarcastic, chop-busting lad, and the violent monster criminal who's hyper-competent. And everybody but Mickey like fits into one of these two buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And putting them together in the same room is fun, because usually, you know, the competent, violent one can bully the bumbling one. And Guy Ritchie did have an eye for casting, because he discovered Jason Statham. You know, he took this guy who was like a diver and an underwear model, paid him $5,000 to be in Lock, Stock, and then $15,000 to be in Snatch, and now he's, you know, one of the biggest actors in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And
he looks so great though, you know, like with his movie choices. It's been kind of lean when Statham over the, he was like, he did really good, and then he was like all of a sudden like, oh, I'll be in this like drama about war or something like that. You're like, dude, just beat people up. Yeah. We just want to beat people up in fucking movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would love to see Crank 3. Oh, that's like my dream movie.
Yes.
Seeing Crank in high voltage was definitely a 2000s high point for us, for sure.
My God, they're only an hour and 20 minutes. Every movie now is 8 million hours long. Each one of those movies is less than an hour and a half. They're just perfect.
Yes.
That's been a frequent complaint on this pod about like the 2000s versus now, is that like people really knew how to make a tight 90 back then, and just nobody does that now.
No.
It was expected back then is the thing. Like in the 2000s and the 90s, it was kind of expected that movies were 90 minutes. And I really think now the reason it happens is that like the movie theaters cost so much money that they're like, hey, you know, we got to give them their money's worth. This movie's going to be fucking 2 hours and 58 minutes. And you're like, that's not like getting my money's worth. I don't need that.
I got shit to do. Yeah. I'm not buying two popcorns because your movie is 3 hours long.
I had to piss four times and you don't even put the fucking intermission in it.
Yeah.
I've said on this pod before that I think that you should need to get a license to make a movie over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And like the state should be responsible for giving out like 10 to 15 of these licenses.
Like how can the MCU make TV shows and also do the other, like the MCU makes TV shows and all their movies are 3 hours long. It's like, fuck, man. How much time do you need?
Well, yeah, that's what happens when the quality is slop. You can churn out a lot of it.
Yeah, it's basically like wrestling. They're just like, here's more. Hey, you want more? Here's 3 hours more a week. And like, that's how they make their money. The volume of content.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, like Giordano just said, Guy Ritchie discovers Jason Statham, but sadly, he fundamentally misunderstands bald excellence. Because in one of his dog shit movies, Revolver, he has the audacity to put a rug on Jason Statham.
I'll put it in the show notes. God damn.
You don't put a spoiler on a Ferrari.
No, he looks so bad in mm-hmm. that rug. Like, we've talked a lot about bald excellence on this podcast. That's probably... But
and Giordano shouldn't even be allowed. He's stealing valor.
Yeah, I'm definitely sort of like a mixed person using the N-word or something on this one. But
he's a light-skinned POC. he's a white passing bald man.
You know, when I talk about bald excellence, it is sort of like a Vietnamese kid using the N-word. But Guy Ritchie doesn't understand bald excellence, and he's running away from it when. As we talked about in the Office episode, the most Sigma male thing you can do is to actually lean into the baldness.
Yes, horseshoe. Or if you go really hard, horseshoe ponytail. Mm-hmm.
You can't comb it over.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why Jason Statham was cast was because his dad was actually like one of these street hustlers. It's very cool, that manner of quick talking salesman. There's something attractive about that figure. So
yeah.
his speech that he gives with Cockney rhyming slang is awesome. It's a lot of fun.
I want to talk about one character before we move on from our characters. Barry the Baptist. Yeah, who I said earlier, one of the greatest characters on screen. What I love about him, I'm just going to read from the actor's Wikipedia article real quick. Leonard John McClane was an English unlicensed boxer, bouncer, bodyguard, businessman, and actor. He was known as the Governor, the King of the Cobbles, and the hardest man in Britain. This guy was a literal underground boxer from the 60s to the 80s who fought between 2,000 and 3,000 unlicensed fights in his prime. 6'3", over 20 stone, that is 280 pounds, and was considered the unofficial heavyweight champion of Great Britain. And just the icing on the cake, on top of his unlicensed boxing, he was an enforcer in London's criminal underworld. This guy played himself in Lockstock.
Yeah.
There's a fucking documentary about the governor.
Oh, yeah?
But they fucked it up, and it's like most of it's like acting and shit. Like, it's mostly dramatizations. They don't just do the documentary. I hate that shit. Yeah. It's like, I don't want some guy act like, just show me governor stuff.
Yeah, you know? Give me interviews and raw footage.
I have a clip of him right here I'll play.
What's this Eddie like then?
He's a fucking thief. Oh no, he's better than good. He's a fucking liability.
Harry has a colleague, a monster of a man, Barry the Baptist. The Baptist got his name by drowning people for hatching.
And so this is like one of those guys. We just talked about Paulie Walnuts. We just did an episode on The Sopranos and how like you can't cast someone to play this guy as well, because it has to be the guy. Like Paulie in real life, Tony Sirico is that guy. And this guy, the governor, was Barry the Baptist. And yeah. So you're not going to find someone better, and he certainly is not going to do it once he starts casting like A-listers in his movies.
Yeah.
If you were to transcribe what Barry the Baptist said, every word would begin with an apostrophe.
Atchit Ari.
If you don't want to be counting the fingers, you haven't got.
The other character feature of this movie is that Guy Ritchie, it seems like he's kind of a guy's guy, because
100%.
He has a lot of friends that appear in his movies, and one of his rules seems to be no women allowed, unless they're his wife.
Not a lot of women.
Yeah, no. We noticed in Lockstock that there is a single woman in the entire movie, and she appears out of focus in the background from the neck down because she's like a stripper dancing behind Barry. Forget about the Bechdel test. Like, this is like negative points on that scale.
Yeah, this is no women. No girls allowed.
And then Snatch has two women one of whom is burned to death, and the other, I believe, is non-binary coded. And so this is a guy who, this is literally a guy. He made one movie about a woman, and then he married her, so.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, the Madonna thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To give you an idea of how much of a guy's guy he is, one of the women that we briefly see is just a series of topless women on playing cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Negative points on the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we did our Batman episode, we did mention how, like, The Dark Knight is better when it comes to practical effects and acting, and yet Batman Begins makes more sense as a story, and that's really what Lock, Stock, and Snatch feel like, where Lock, Stock has a much more coherent story, whereas Snatch has these plot holes if you think about it too much. For instance, Bricktop, he owns bookies, yes, and fixes fights that he's presumably the ones taking the bets for. And so he, like, takes people's bets that he's trying to make lose. And but, like, the reason why the movies are super close, they're only really separated at like the margin in terms of quality, is because Snatch makes up for it with the direction, with the production, and with the casting. Like, Lock, Stock has a lot of actors who, you know, they were the best available in, like, the London independent film industry. But, like, there's a lot of stinkers in terms of casting in Lock, Stock. You know, the guy who plays Dog was not the best in the world at that role.
His acting strategy seems to be just yell all the time.
Mm-hmm. Even, like, Rory, to a certain extent, I didn't love.
It's hilarious that one of the best actors in both these movies is the fucking soccer player. Vinny Jones, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love those. Like, I love character actors. And, like, I feel like the people that I have a problem with in Lock, Stock are not the character actors. It's the regular actors who just aren't bringing a lot of life to the table. And in Snatch, you know, this is where Guy Ritchie has access to, like, the best actors in the world. And so instead of Dog, you get Frankie Four Fingers.
Benicio del Toro,
yeah. Or instead of, you know, some minor actor, you get Dennis Farina, who I think is, like, mm-hmm, one of my favorite people in this movie. He fucking rocks. I love his, like, greasy, disgusting Chicago accent. He's, yes, R.I.P. to a real one.
86 carats.
Where?
London.
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 London?
Yes, London. You know, fish, chips, cup of tea, bad food, worse weather, Mary fucking Poppins, London.
Okay, so moving on to style, the style of the film. You know, we've mentioned that he definitely is ripping off Tarantino. You know, Ben was telling me, like, he was sort of saying, like, hey, can I have more Quentin Tarantino movies? And this is the We Have Tarantino at Home. You know, he does a lot of trunk shots. He has an amazing soundtrack in both of these movies. The songs are all bangers and used super effectively. I've had them stuck in my head since I've started preparing for this.
Banger after banger, expertly used on the soundtrack. That's part of the Tarantino comparison. Snatch does have one swing and a miss in that there's a lot of beatboxing jazz flute that punctuates the movie at several points.
When do they play that?
And it is certainly a choice.
Oh, I like this one.
I don't.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good.
Now we're cooking. That one's sick. I don't know what you're talking about. It's iconic.
Okay,
that's like
disagree.
Their Seinfeld, like, boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. Oh, one aspect of Guy Ritchie's style is that he got his start making music videos. So if you only have 4.5 minutes for a normal length song to tell your fucking visual story, you are going to be efficient with your time. And that's one of the things about both these movies, that there is not an ounce of fat on them. I also heard that he got his start with commercials as well as music videos. Maybe we'll have Scooter do a fact check on that, but that's even less. That's 90 seconds. So he has these, like, smash cut edits to really move the plot around. Like, when Dennis Farina needs to come to England, we smash cut to him, like, stamping a passport, taking a shot of vodka with his Valium, the shot of a plane coming in, and boom, he's in London. We're at a brisk fucking clip.
It is like the editing in a commercial. You're absolutely right. That's mm-hmm. what editing in a commercial feels like. You use that sound, like, whooshing effect to kind of just speed you along. And a lot of slow motion shots, you know, a lot of squibs in the movie, very vulgar, very snappy, very conversational, and a ton of swearing.
Squibs are the best.
Yeah.
That's every movie should have those.
Yes. Yeah, this movie just looks fucking cool. That's what it comes down to. Yeah, and quite literally, the first time I saw this, it was because they didn't have Pulp Fiction at the Blockbuster. And someone I was with was like, we have Quentin Tarantino at home, and we watch Guy Ritchie instead. That happened to me.
So moving on to the last section here, which is themes. So we usually talk about themes in whatever we review. I don't know that this movie has any themes.
I think these movies are actually more like, hey, isn't all this stuff badass?
Yes.
Like, that is the themes to these specific movies that he makes. It's like, hey, aren't these people all pretty badass?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I'm looking for most of the time. So.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like, I thought going into this, maybe the theme would be about some kind of butterfly effect. Maybe it would be like, you know, hits bong. Like, isn't it wild how, like, everything's connected in this Rube Goldberg machine? But actually watching it, I'm like, no, this is just fucking badass and cool. This is like, what if you take a bunch of badasses and put them in a room together and see what happens?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. Isn't this cool? Like, it's really an isn't this cool genre, which is great. That's what Quentin Tarantino is too, but he's a little more artsy about it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and like, when you rent this on Amazon, which I did, one of the adjective tags that they have is cerebral. And I'm like, I don't know if it's a cerebral movie. I don't know if it made me think anything other than pretty fucking badass.
Yeah. I love cerebral, of course.
Yeah. You know, we were kind of talking about it earlier, but we're both from Windsor, Ontario, and like, you know, not far from you. And after I saw this, I was like, oh yeah, I'm into foreign films. You know,
me too.
Cerebral, you know, French Wave. I think that's what Snatch is. You know?
Me too. Absolutely. Windsor is very famous here in Ohio.
Oh yeah. I bet for underage drinking reasons, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And gambling and strip clubs.
Like, yep.
Very much.
The Guy Ritchie Industries.
Yes. Yes.
So apparently what you're supposed to say when you go over customs, if you want to go to the strip club and the Canadian border guards are asking you what brings you to town, you tell them that you're going to the Windsor Ballet, because Windsor doesn't actually have a ballet. And so that way you can be honest and they won't give you a hard time, but you don't need to, you know, embarrass yourself by telling them you're going to.
When I went over to Toronto, I said, I'm going to wrestling. And they were like, real wrestling? And I was like, no, fake wrestling. I'm going to fake wrestling. I'm going to watch fake fight. That's the only reason I leave my house.
Well, I think for our closing thoughts, we notice a lot on this pod about how so many things have gotten worse over the past 20 years, especially as technology has improved. And one of the ways that things have gotten worse is Guy Ritchie movies, where, you know, these first couple movies are about low-level crime, maybe a couple local crime lords. The third movie, Rock and Rollo, which Giordano and I each went to go see in theaters. We were so fucking stoked because we had heard that Guy Ritchie was back. Is about real estate development and gentrification in London and money laundering. And I can't tell you a single plot detail except that I remember there's a joke about how Gerard Butler, the homophobe, might have had sex with his boy before he went to prison because he's a homophobe, but he's a good friend.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, like, it's so tough when they're like, let's take on some real issues. It's like, don't actually do that.
Yeah.
Or you did not do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe he can't make this movie because this small-time criminal world in London, like, is gone and just has been replaced by, like, yuppies and real estate developers.
Russian oligarchs, yeah.
I mean, they usually end up pushing people. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They push these same people just kind of out to the suburbs in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what happened in Columbus, actually. Mm. You know, I live downtown. It's pretty gentrified down here. But if you go 15 minutes out of downtown, you go to a place and it's pretty hardcore out there.
Yeah.
Like, the place I grew up is pretty crazy compared to what it was when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Guy Ritchie needs to make a movie in the London suburbs next. Maybe that should be his next move. Sick. Because, like, the world that he wants to represent and that he's so good at representing has been paved over, quite literally. And I think that that's kind of what Rock and Rollo was inadvertently showing us, because its soul is missing. And so in this movie, like, it stars Idris Elba and Tom Hardy and Gerard Butler, which, by the way, there's giant handsomeness inflation in these movies going on, because these guys are like our small-time criminals. And they're guys who, like, hang out in what looks like an American Legion or something. They're smoking cigarettes, they're playing darts, having drinks. But their scam is doing like a $20 million real estate development deal. And it's like, yeah, but these guys are supposed to be like the same small-time petty criminals, and they're doing real estate development deals with Russian oligarchs. It just doesn't make any sense. He's lost his way. And we kind of saw a similar thing. I don't know if you're a fan of Peaky Blinders, but we thought that it had a lot of parallels with that show, because in the first couple seasons, you know, they're having fun, they're making booze, they're
rigging horse races.
Yeah. And then by the third and fourth movies, aren't they like trying to restore like the Russian monarchy and like stop Hitler? And
they have one of the enemies is British fascism in the 1930s in one of those later shows. And it's like, I get it. This is some fun wish fulfillment to see our working class gangsters beat up fascists. But the stakes have gotten way beyond running the bookies of the horse racing track or like the greyhound racing track. I'm not sure.
I started watching Peaky Blinders and everybody whispers on it. Drove me fucking crazy. So I stopped watching.
Oh, yeah. It's a subtitle show for sure.
Oh, there is a little bit in this movie about like the northern southern cultural differences in England.
Yes.
Which is fun.
Yeah, for the most part, this movie like exists in a fantasy world for Americans. It's like the Shire of crime. Everybody knows each other. They squabble and beef and do shenanigans. But for a British audience, I feel like this is laughing at MAGA country, because in a movie full of bumbling criminals, no one is dumber than the northerners.
Yes.
One of them's named Gary. And he's in his 20s in the 90s. Have you ever met a Gary that young?
The Gen X
Gary. Gary is a boomer name. Mm-hmm. I want to say these three words. Fucking northern monkeys. And also, fucking southern fairies. That's my attempt at the Cockney South and the North for that conflict between the North and South.
Yeah, the Northern English accent is so fucking funny.
Yeah, it's one of the
so,
best ones.
Like, because we always think of British accents as being like sophisticated and refined, and then you like meet someone from Northern England or Scotland and you're like, well, this is disgusting, this is hilarious. Like, a mutual friend of ours, someone mentioned on the podcast many times, you know, this is the mentioned on our Matrix episode and our Lord of the Rings episode, this was the idiot who really liked Rings of Power. We were in England and he met this Scottish girl, beautiful woman, right? Very fun, cool. But she had like the thickest Scottish accent I've ever heard. And my friend, you know, had hooked up with her, and I was kind of like, I don't know if it would work for me, because it's like, yes, like beautiful, cool woman. But also like, can you imagine her dirty talking? Oh, I'm so wet right now. You know,
if she calls it a fanny in, you know, I'm
oh,
out.
Oh, yeah, right in the fanny. Just a wee bit more. I'm so close. Just seems like it would kind of ruin it for you.
But in any event, that has been our retrospective on the two good Guy Ritchie movies. So huge thanks to Brian for coming on the pod to talk about this famous guy.
Thank you for having me.
Anything you want to plug other than the Guys podcast?
Guys, a podcast about guys, and patreon.com/murderxbrian. It's Shocktober, which if you don't know who I am, then you probably don't care. But we talk about shock jocks for a month, and it's usually very fun and people like it. So please check out Guys, at least. It's a free one.
I love your... So I like listened to every Howard Stern episode from like 2008 to 2020, and I love your series on Howard Stern. It's so good.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. We just did The Grease Man today. So
nice.
Are headed back to the Shock Jock Mines.
We have a Dane Cook episode on this pod, and your series on him was very helpful for getting the reps in on the Dane Cook discourse.
Yes, it's called Now We're Cooking. It is a podcast about Dane Cook, and it's on my Patreon. I've done some weird ones. I did This Is My TED Talk, and it's where me and a different person every week watched a half hour of TED and TED 2 and only reviewed that half hour. That was my weirdest one. That was definitely wild. But yeah, I do series on my Patreon. And I also do Guys Plus over there, which is more guys. So, you know, people like it. Come and check me out.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, as always, if you joined us, please like, subscribe, do all that stuff. Leave a comment. We love reading the comments. We respond to every comment. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll see you later.
Ciao, ciao.
Peace.
We do have a great coffee-flavored coffee joke where someone brings Jason Statham just a cocktail, and he's like, I thought this was a pub. I was looking for a refreshing beverage.
That's your Jason Statham.
That's the best I got.
I thought this was a pub. I wanted a refreshing beverage. He sort of like breathes it, I feel like. Yeah, we love...
We'll put the real line after. We'll see who was closer.
We love a coffee-flavored coffee bit.
Can I get a beer-flavored beer? Oh, wait, okay, here's a bit. I don't know if this will work. We don't have this prepared. It's not in our notes. What if you set a Lockstock plot line somewhere with worse accents? What if it were like the American South or Appalachia? What if it was the penis and balls speech, but with the Louisiana Bayou accent?
Right, yeah. Now, see here, there's two types of people in the world now, see? There's balls and there's penises.
Now, the balls, they extend outward. No, fuck, the dick.
Now, if you want to find someone in New Orleans, you got to go out and find Remoulade.
Yeah, Ricky Remoulade, we call him.
We call him Remoulade because he's a little bit of everything.